Cosmic Shed.
Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Shed. It's just me, Andrew, in the shed today. It's been a while, sorry about that. Just really busy with loads and loads of things. Now, if you've not noticed, we do actually have a YouTube channel now, so you may have missed that we have interviews with Warwick Davis, Lou Ferrigno, and Scott Adkins over on our YouTube channel now. They were recorded at Comic-Con in London, which Ty and I went to a couple of weeks ago. We also met Nichelle Nichols there and a few other wonderful people, and that will all be part of an audio episode coming soon. But do head over to our YouTube channel and catch those interviews now. But this week, I'm busy making the Institute of Physics podcast at the Cheltenham Science Festival. But yesterday, I met Hannah Peel, who's a composer, musician. Obviously, she was at Cheltenham Science Festival, and her work does come into the science sphere quite a lot. Those science crossovers for Hannah's music involve dementia and space and the mind and a shed. And if that weren't exciting enough, Hannah's way of making music that cross between science and discovery and music has called comparisons with Delia Derbyshire, and I began by asking her how that comparison felt to her.
I'm really proud of that comparison because actually I think they're wonderful women, Delia Derbyshire, but also Daphne Oram as well, in particular, that kind of era of, I suppose, female artists but also scientists and explorers in that genre that really kind of went against the norm and really tried to push what they were doing. And it's a shame that they weren't recognised as much during their time. It seems to be, you know, the last 10, 20 years that people have started to go, actually, they were really, really pioneering and we should be celebrating that more. So it feels quite nice that now they're in the press in particular, and critics and other people are picking up on that side of things of females and, you know, anybody that's making music or making independent music and not going with the mainstream, which is for me what the likes of Delia and Daphne Oram were doing. They kind of went against the norm. They did stuff that nobody else was allowing them to do, and that's something I quite idolise and think that's a great thing. You know, I want to be like David Attenborough and in my 90s still doing it.
Okay, so you are a musician at a science festival. What is a musician doing at a science festival?
I know. I just feel a bit random at the moment. I know, I was just in the taxi here with the director of the festival as well, and a lady who's studying climate change. And but I suppose my last album, which was Awake But Always Dreaming, was a look at the way my grandmother fell into dementia, and as an artist and as a person, how I emotionally dealt with that by obviously dealing with and witnessing it, but also seeing my family go through that. And you know, at the end of the day, when she could not remember us or where she was and was really living a kind of cocoon, solitary confinement in her own mind, because she started to lose the power to really kind of communicate and was very sleepy a lot of the time. But one Christmas, just before sadly she passed away, we decided to just sing some carols after something I'd read online about music, and I thought, oh, why not? Should we just try it? So we started singing carols, and from a very slumber sleep in a chair, she just woke up and started singing, and the lyrics came to her and she sang along until she just got too tired and she stopped. And it was one of the most breathtaking, life-changing moments I've ever had and experienced because of it. And what made me really angry at the time was that I'd never been able to connect with her before, and being a musician, I was angry at myself for not knowing that I could have done that a long, long time ago. So I kind of set out on a path to discover why. So happened to meet a lady who's one of the lead scientists at UCL in research for dementia and Alzheimer's, and she creates magically, she builds brain neurons in petri dishes, and they analyse, her team analyse them, and she's funded by the Alzheimer's Research UK and she just happens to be from the same hometown that I am, and someone put me in touch with her on Facebook. So I said, can I come meet you? And she invited me to this event at the Science Museum in London, and all her colleagues were there doing lectures, and I met her, and I met Alzheimer's Research, the marketing team as well, and told them about my idea for an album. And I just found out all the facts that I possibly could. And I honestly could not believe that one in three of us will die of dementia. There is no cure. It is a disease, whereas a lot of people still assume that it's part of old age. There are 200 different types of dementia. The two in three of us will, women will be more affected than men, and they still don't know the reason why. And that for me was just such an astounding moment. So from then on, I started to work with Alzheimer's Research. I wrote some music for their Christmas campaign, so that was 2016 Christmas. Did a lot of campaigning for them, did a big show to launch the album, raised money for the charity, and had Christopher Eccleston, the actor, come and do poetry readings. A wonderful novelist called Lavinia Greenlaw, and she did a screening of her first film, which is based around her father and his dementia. And we raised quite a lot of money. So from then on, I've seemed to have got involved with the Wellcome Collection and collaborating and talking about my research in how I've discovered music and the mind and memory.
Do you have an interest in science beyond this? Is this kind of kickstarted an interest in?
Yeah, I think, I suppose I do it from an emotional side and a passion. So I've always been interested in science as a kid anyway, but I think when you go into the creative industries, you forget about that. I have a band called the Magnetic North, and we're penned as a psychogeography kind of band. So we do a lot of research to the places that we write about, the history, the people, the stories, the folklore, and that gets infiltrated into the music. We've done an album on Orkney and one on a town called Skelmsdale, and then we're working on a third record. So there's always been an element of huge amount of research behind it. So it does feel quite natural to then Awake But Always Dreaming, and then actually that the next album I'm doing comes out in September, and that is then a journey from the mind into space. And so the next few angles are all about how the comparisons between the brain and space, and how we so there's another set of things that are now happening.
Yeah, go on. How do you go from the mind into space? What do you mean?
I think one of the most fascinating things that I found out of the Awake But Always Dreaming project or album was when I went to see Selena, who was working at UCL in her petri dishes, and when I looked down the microscope, the brain neurons looked like you were just looking at the universe, and it was so incredible to see, and it just looked like you were looking at the star constellations. And you know, I think I said to her out loud, I said, oh my God, it's space. And just that comparison from a tiny little neuron to the stars, and then just delving into what that means. So and reading books on theoretical physics and string theories and everything else around that, just to try and get a sense. So I was writing for, sounds quite mad, but I was writing for a Colliery Brass Band in Yorkshire, and they'd commissioned me to write a piece of music with synthesizers and brass. And so I decided to base it on a character of a lady, just someone that I'd made up, that was a lady that was a composer. Nobody knew about her, but she was a massive stargazer. She'd never left her home in Yorkshire. And she worked in her back garden shed, and she was called Mary Cassio. And she had dreams always of going to Cassiopeia. So so she goes on this journey to Cassiopeia in her late 80s and leaves Yorkshire. And when I was writing the music, it came very apparent that maybe not necessarily that she had gone on that journey. Reality is, was she really on that journey, or was she sat in her day chair kind of dreaming of that mission? Or is this more her last dying breath into another realm that we just don't know? So it's very open-ended. The music ends with something that really evokes that question.
Amazing. So that's out in September?
That's out in September.
Okay.
So.
I'm really excited.
Oh, wonderful.
Do you as a musician have a sense of how the brain in a dementia patient is responding to the music? Why it works and why it has that connection?
Yeah, I mean, on a very basic level, you know, in layman terms, I know exactly what's happening and why, you know, we develop our auditory receptors in our brains at 16 weeks, and those are the first things to be formed. So as a dementia takes hold of the brain, it eats away from the outside, and it can eat away certain parts of that outsideness, but ultimately it shrinks and shrinks down to the weight of an orange at the very end, which is incredible when you think about the size of our brains. And so ultimately, our memory of music in particular, and poetry as well, because poetry is another form of music, stay with us until the last few things. So the research kind of says that if, you know, kind of until your late teens, 20s, that is the music that will stick with you. So if you have listened to very bad music when you were young,
music.
I did have terrible 90s music, so I'm quite worried that if I get to that age, it might be haunted by those tunes. But so, you know, now we're singing Vera Lynn and things like that to people, but what's it going to be in like another 60 years' time?
Oh,
it'll be quite funny. But
things can only get better, I guess. It was that moment, wasn't it? But on your website, you've got, what's it called? I've got the memory. Is it
memory playlist.
Yeah, so tell me about that.
Yeah, so it started with an idea that, I mean, on Radio 6 Music, Lauren Laverne had been doing memory tapes, and her team had asked me to put together a story and a track listing to go with the album, which was really fitting. And it just kind of took off in the sense that a lot of people that I knew who were artists or writers said, this is a wonderful idea, I would love to do this. So I started to reach out to a few other people and said, why don't we do this? Put your most memorable tracks down and really try to get rid of the kind of ego as an artist, which is really, really hard. We'll put it on a memory playlist and a story. And a lot of people do have their own stories and experiences, because nearly everybody has some kind of experience with someone who has lived with dementia or is living with dementia. So it became this wonderful project, and we've got like Gary Newman on there, John Fox, the wonderful screenwriter Frank Cottrell Boyce, Bill Drummond from KLF, and I've really focused, I suppose, on the people that I know and I can reach out to. But it started to infiltrate into a couple more things, and it was featured at a brain festival last week in Folkestone, where they just played the memory playlist over and over again over the course of the weekend in a certain venue, and then people could leave their own musical memories as well on a pinboard. So it was really nice to see that happening. But there's, you know, there's a lot of, there's a really great film called Awakenings, which is just a wonderful kind of, you know, a lot of people in care homes just listening to iPods with their favourite music on and just becoming alive and dancing. And, you know, I suppose at the end of the day, it's what made you happy, and it's the emotions, because the thing that I've discovered is anybody that's living with dementia, it's the emotions that happen the most. It's not the facts, it's not the names of things, it's the fact that they still love and they still care and they still feel emotions and still feel loneliness, but find it hard to express that. And I think that's really important. So if music obviously is based on emotions and makes somebody feel happy or sad, they're going to react to that in the best way, and then you can communicate and connect with them. So it's a beautiful thing.
It really is. You're inspired by, if I may say, slightly different things than I would expect most music that we hear is inspired by.
You know, there's a great quote that Nina Simone says, that as an artist, something along the lines of, as an artist, your job is to reflect what you see in the everyday, and because you have that gift of explaining things in a different way to make people realise different things. And it's a wonderful quote, and I can't remember it word for word, but it really does kind of resonate with me that I don't feel like I want to talk about the breakup that happened or the mess of the house I live in. Or for me as an artist, there's already people doing that, and it gives me no interest whatsoever. But I suppose when it comes to creating music, this album, the Wait But Always Dreaming album in particular, I didn't know what it was about for a very long time because I didn't want to admit to what was happening, and I didn't want to put my emotions into and realizations of what was going on until it hit me flat in the face. And I had hundreds of tracks around this whole thing of going into the rabbit hole of the mind and a different world, and for ages I just couldn't figure out why. So I think with every album or anything that I do, you make the music that comes out that you feel, you don't necessarily know why, and it's only in the aftermath of finishing it or feeling like you've completed something, then you start to question, why have I made that, and why is this happening, and how has that gone about?
If you were to choose the piece of music which was going to stick with you?
There's a lot of things that make me feel very different, but I would say the one thing that really opened me up to anything that was not just something on the radio or on your cassette, for me on a cassette player as a child, was my next door neighbour gave me a vinyl copy when I was about 7 years old of the Carpenters album and the song Why Do Birds Suddenly Appear, and I put that on and everything changed. I'd never known that someone could sing so beautifully. Even now talking about it makes me well up. I think it's just an incredible moment that, you know, just changed everything. I don't know why I get so emotional about that.
No, it's okay. Well, listen, thank you so much. I can't wait to hear the new album.
Oh, thank you.
I wanna go from my shed into space. thank you so much for talking to me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's lovely to meet you.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that. Hannah's new album is out, as we say, in September. I think September the 8th. She's going to be performing at Blue Dot Festival and possibly a few other festivals over the summer. I'll be there at Blue Dot Festival too with my Apollo 11 campervan show. If you're there, do come and say hello. And we'll be back soon with that Comic-Con episode. I don't know if you can hear that fly. It's not just me in the shed. And thank you so much for listening.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.